What's going on, everybody? It's the 100 Sanford Podcast. I am Lamar Lovelace, and I am with my two bangers. You know who they are. Trick or Trey, Graham gang, Coffee.
Gang. Gang, gang.
It's championship Trey.
You know what, man? I keep forgetting the
one time. One-time national champion, Graham Coffey, joining you this afternoon.
One time? Why do you say one time, man?
Because we're going to have
we got more to – yeah, exactly. Got to distinguish year by year.
Man, I'm just calling myself reload. That's all we're going to do, just keep reloading those natties up, keep reloading them up. But what's going on, fellas? Glad to have you guys back in the building. Glad to be back in the seat. I think we got some good information that we could talk about today. We got obviously, we got – not the transfer portal for us, but the coaching portal for us. We're losing some coaches, got some coaches in the house, and still looking for some coaches. What do you guys want to talk about today, man? Well, hold on. Let's do this first because we got to pay bills. The 100 Sanford Podcast is powered by the Roll Up Network, and this show was brought to you by our partner, Prize Picks. That's right, Daily Fantasy Simplified. Enter, win, and withdraw fast. Just pick the players and the games, the over and under on the stats. Sit back and see what happens. It's that easy. All sports available, but especially our favorite college football. So go to prizepicks.com. Use the promo code 100SANFORD for a 100% match up to $100 and have fun. Also, go to the site, our website, the 100SANFORD.com website, where you can get all that cool merch, the natty merch. That's right. Not only the 100 Sanford merch, but also the Natty merch. Click on the link for Fanatics. It'll take you directly to Fanatics. Yes, we do get something from that, but hopefully our fans who like us can say, hey, you know what? Instead of giving y'all money through like some of these other links that you can donate, go get yourself some Natty gear, and then we actually get a little piece of something on the bag end. I don't know how big it is, but it helps keep the lights on. How about that? So also, we have a special guest. So before we go any further, we got a special guest, Jordan Hill. That's right. He covers or will be covering the Dawgs on 247. So we are excited to have him in the building, and he's coming over from Auburn. So that's really going to be a big deal. We're going to try to find out some intel on Auburn. But hey, what do you want to talk about? What do you want to talk about? Where do you want to go?
We could talk about the portal and coach. The crazy thing is we haven't even started looking for nobody in the portal, though. That's a crazy thing.
Yeah.
I guess we're comfortable with our roster. Well, even though we lost a couple of guys, they still comfortable with our roster, how we recruited for the past 3 years.
Man, I think it's kind of smart maybe to wait. Like, give these guys – you get a good look at everybody in spring practice. You know, I feel like during the season you got to give your starters so many reps that you maybe don't get as good a look at some of these younger guys. But in spring you got time to really, you know, give them some shots with the first team and see how they hold up and see where you might need to adjust after G-Day.
I was just about to talk about G-Day because that's a perfect time. Or because remember we didn't start getting portal guys until like after everything, after summer and stuff like that. That's when we got Kendrick.
Yeah, Kendrick and Arik, they came in what, like July?
And Stevenson, yeah. Well, Smith, we got him. Yeah, we got everybody after summer.
Well, I think everything's just so upside down. I mean, you had so many guys in the portal. I mean, you really can be picky and choosy about what you need. I think after the first – couple weeks of spring camp, there might be some injuries, some attrition there. There's some ways to look at some guys and bring them in. Like even like JT, I mean, obviously he's talked about entering the portal, but he's not really truly out of Georgia. I mean, so yeah, he's one of those guys. He's still taking classes. So he's one of those guys, like many guys, are still taking classes at their respective universities, and they're not going to transfer until after their classes are actually done. So I think those are some good opportunities that Georgia can look at, can bring in some guys, some supplemental talent. I don't look at them bringing in anybody that's really going to compete for some major starting minutes that late, but it would definitely be some guys that have the ability to come in, affect your roster, help it out in a tremendous way. I wouldn't say more like Kendrick. I mean, he was a whole different animal, but but still some guys that can bring some valuable talent to you.
You never know though, man. You never know who, like, I mean, Caleb Williams clearly would have been the starter at Oklahoma. That's a premier program, you know, all that. He still decides to dip out. I mean, I think you never know who's going to leave, who's going to stay, all that stuff.
But that's a huge name, Graham. I mean, that's a different talent.
I'm not saying it, yeah, but I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
kind of using him as an example to say all these guys this day and age, like, one little thing doesn't maybe go how they had planned or how they hoped, and
they get out of there with the quickness.
Yeah. Especially, and I mean, especially a place like Georgia that's defending national champions and, you know, all the things that that can offer you exposure wise, NIL wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think that Georgia has a good chance to, you know, really go and get somebody if the right type of person is out there, but they got to hop in the portal first, right?
Yeah, I agree. There's just so many names out there, man. I feel bad for these kids because I think a lot of guys are really going to get left by the wayside. They're going to be at universities and going to be at programs that really can't develop them as much as some of the programs could have developed them as they were there. And I'm just going to use Georgia as an example, not from any of the guys that we had leave, but I'm not going to mention any names. But, dude, we got 14 guys that are going to be, you know, going to the combine. And that's not pro day. That's not including pro day at Georgia. That's invite only. So, I mean, there's going to be guys that get opportunities in the NFL just by being at Georgia pro day because you were part of a national champion. So a lot of that helps, you know, and I think you made a great point, Graham, because when you play for a national champion, it's a different type of exposure. Look at how many guys leave Alabama and they get drafted in the sixth round, seventh round, and they were fringe guys that had no – I mean, if they were anywhere else, they wouldn't get an opportunity. So I would have to rethink my options if I was a guy that's, you know, getting itchy about the portal. And I think really, truly, man, I mean, just to put it out there, I think NIL has really affected that a lot. I think kids are looking around and they're saying, if I go to X school, I'm going to get X amount of money. NIL based, and I'm going to increase my immediate financial power, and they're not looking long term, and I hate that, you know, that's happening to kids, but it is happening. But I don't know, I just got some nasty feelings about that right now. I think they need to really step in. The NCAA needs to really sit down and get to the drawing board and say, look, we need to regulate the portal, regulate NIL to some extent. You know, what can be done? I mean, heck, we see what's going on with sliced bread and everything over there at Texas A&M. And that's going to shake out eventually, right? I think we're going to see a lot of guys in the portal from that school eventually. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you know what else is interesting too? I mean, now that we're on the topic, like JT, I know he's, I think, waiting to graduate for eligibility reasons and all that to transfer, but – it's still kind of interesting. He hasn't committed anywhere yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because everybody, all the other quarterbacks, you got Dart, he went to Ole Miss. Caleb, he finally announced he went to USC. You got other guys that even Mac Johnson, he announced he's going to Texas A&M. Then you got the other quarterback from Texas A&M. He went to Auburn. And another, Bo Nix, Oregon.
Those guys on campus? Are they at their respective campuses?
Yeah. Bo Nix is.
But JT's not. I mean, I don't know. Is he able to actually, quote unquote,
commit
to another school?
Yeah. I mean, you can commit anytime. I mean, like, there's no paperwork on a commitment.
It's just weird. He hasn't committed yet. It's just like.
Yeah.
So
everybody else, like, I don't know. It just, because he's not. He's actually a talented quarterback. He actually has value. It's just weird that he hasn't committed to a school yet.
So are you two speculating that maybe JT pulls back that portal and says, hey, I'm just going to stick at Georgia?
Maybe. But I think it also says a little bit about what the market is for JT.
Yeah.
And I think that it says quite a bit about – you know, I think it's kind of interesting how many Georgia fans we watched, you know, talk about, like, just the whole JT Stetson thing, which we don't need to relive or relitigate. But you know what I mean, man? There was a lot of people out there acting like it was, the stupidest thing ever to not have him starting games because of that recruiting ranking and because of some things he did on the field as well. And I think he's talented, but it's like, if he's as great as, as everyone seemed to think he was, then why aren't, you know, SEC rivals and Big 10 and Big 12 and Pac 12 schools lining up to catch him? Why is it that?
Because Spencer Rattler, Caleb Williams took Spencer Rattler's spot, and Spencer Rattler is at South Carolina right now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which is
interesting.
Like,
interesting.
Right. And so, I mean, there's part of
even,
me that's like.
Even his bag, even his so called person that took his spot, he went in the portal. He already at another school. He's at Pitt.
Yeah, you're talking about Keaton Slovis.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're talking about he's up for the Heisman Trophy. They got him ranked second, I think, nationally as a Heisman Heisman candidate.
It's just weird that he hasn't committed to a school yet. It just because you see – and you – it's just weird he hasn't even took a visit to a school yet. He hasn't took no visits or nothing.
I mean, maybe – I'm not going to – I guess I got to throw it out there. We're talking about maybe he sticks with Georgia. I mean, maybe there was something necessarily wrong with JT physically. Maybe Kirby protected him last year in terms of not throwing him underneath the bus.
Well, because, I can promise you Kirby's protected him plenty.
Oh, no doubt about it. But, I mean, could you imagine Dog Nation saying to this kid, oh, you're not tough enough, you should be doing this, and him actually going out there to hurt himself. And Kirby's the type that he'll fall on the sword for his kids, right? So maybe –
didn't give it. Yeah,
it's just really weird to me that, like, you got some quarterbacks that haven't played a down, like, haven't had meaningful snaps at all. Mm-hmm. And they – like Jack Miller. Jack Miller had didn't play no good – well, no efficient snaps at Ohio State. He's at Florida. John Plumlee played receiver at Ole Miss. He's already at another school.
Facts. I don't know, fellas. I think I'm going to be on that fence to say that maybe JT comes back. I mean, and quite honestly, I'll say this. I don't like the quarterback controversy that could stem from that. I like the competition in the room that can stem from that. But I think, obviously, at the same time, if you have a Stetson, you have a JT, you have a Brock Vandegrift, you have some guys in the room that are competing – that much experience is going to help you and take you a longer way in 2022 versus going with Stet, and there's really truly no experience or depth behind them. And I think maybe it shakes out and they look at it and say, you know what, the offensive line may be better, better protection for JT where you don't have to have him run the football or run around as much as Stetson did. Design of plays may be different. Health may be different coming out of camp. I mean, I think Pickens – being healthy would have helped JT a tremendous amount. I think Tate Ratledge playing right guard would have helped JT out a tremendous amount. You go back and look at that Clemson game, fellas. There was a complete drop off of that offensive line. They were discombobulated after the first quarter when Tate went down. So, you know, it's the butterfly effect, right? But it's interesting that you brought that up, Graham. I mean, it's pretty intuitive of you, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. No, and I mean, I'm not – I haven't, like – I don't have any intel or anything like that. Yeah. It's just, like, what is – you know, what does it say? And
– it's just weird that he had – like, it's just really – I don't know. It just might – he might come back, might withdraw his name because it's just weird he haven't took a visit. He hasn't been
– and has never said anything negative. He's never said anything negative about the program. Matter of fact, I think the only statements that have come out are statements that he made before the season, saying if you got these type of wide receivers, why wouldn't you not use them? And that was something that came out in SEC media day. It didn't come out during the season or after the season in regards to, like, you know, Burton being in the portal. But he's never said anything negative. I think that's pretty – first, it's classy. But second, there's a reason behind it. I think everything's strategic.
Well, and it's also, you know – there was that talk of him and Burton reportedly being a package deal.
Yeah.
And Burton didn't wait, what,
three or four days
before he jumped in the portal and went to Alabama. So that either tells me there's not a big market out there for JT Daniels or, you know.
And then Lane was looking at Ole Miss. Lane, yeah. I think Lane was the – I don't know, because Lane sometimes be trolling, so you never know. And then Lane went and got Dart his from USC, so mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I'd take Dart over. Like, I think, though, you know, other thing I'll say is just that there's always the media and fan perception of things, and then there's the reality of things. And facts. Coaches talk, man. They talk to one another. And, you know, people know what goes on at rival programs and all that behind the doors of the locker room and all that stuff. So it's like, you know, that's not saying necessarily anything good or bad. It's just saying that I don't know, you know. There's layers to it for sure.
Okay, you got to look at JT's whole career. UFC, well, not all shit, so UFC. He started his freshman career, I think he was like 17.
He's a young kid. He's 17.
He reclassified.
Mm-hmm. Got to the college. I think did he play his whole freshman year or he got hurt? He played his whole freshman year.
Yeah, he got hurt first game of his sophomore year.
Mm-hmm. Got hurt. He got hurt again. A lot of teams might look, he hasn't played whole football career. He played only minimum close to 20 games out of three years of college ball.
Yep.
Yeah.
Out of 4 years of college ball.
Yeah, four years, yeah. He still got 2 years of eligibility left, and he had his whole college career, he's only played a minimum almost
19 games.
Yeah, almost
19 games. Yeah, and 13 of those came as a true freshman, which was 4 years ago now.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes, man, and to track it, quite honestly. I mean, it's especially, again, we talked about the portal starting off the show, talked about where this team goes, where they could go, but that's one of those positions that people truly were looking at anyway. Does Kirby bring in somebody? And maybe he has that guy in-house, and that's a good question. But, you know, I wanted to transition to another major topic that we have with Georgia, and that was the coaching situation. I mean, obviously, Kirby solidified. Offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, solidified. But
– well,
yeah. Right now. Come on. Don't do that. Are you going to do that?
I think Todd Monken can still go somewhere.
I was thinking.
You think so?
Yeah, because you seen our DB coach, he waited. I think Todd probably going to hit an NFL job.
Okay, so when you say NFL job, and folks, if you're listening, you don't know, you know, obviously Todd Monken, offensive coordinator, and we're talking about the wide receiving coach position, Hankton left, B. Mac has filled that position, Mike Bobo comes over, and there's still a DB position that's available right now on the staff, and there's been some interviews, and we'll get into that, but when you look at Monken, do you think that he would leave for an offensive coordinator position as an NFL coach or maybe a quarterback coaching position? Because I think these staffs are going to fill up pretty soon, but I'm trying to figure out, like, where would he go at this point? Because I think a guy like Monken wants to go somewhere where he's going to have full control of the offense and maybe guy he wants to develop, a young guy that he wants to develop. Yeah. So where do you
I think? Don't know that's got to be a young guy or whatever. I just think he wants to have – full control of an NFL offense.
And he kind of wants to be back in the NFL where he was at.
Yeah. Well, what's available? Look, man.
What's available is offensive coordinator positions. I think Miami filled theirs. You start looking around. I think a good opportunity, I think, for him would really be the Houston Texans with a young Davis Mills. I think that's a guy he could develop. I don't know, man. I just think that he would wait. I don't think this would be the year. I think he would wait another year because a lot of these positions that he would have to go to are franchises that really aren't stable. I mean, truly, truly aren't stable. When you start looking at some of these teams, the Texans aren't stable, right? Miami has a situation going on right now with the Brian Flores litigations that are going on. I don't know. I think he stays, though.
The Saints have an open OC job. The Texans have an open OC job.
After this, we need to talk about how Kirby literally just playing chess with his coaching staff.
the Jags have an open OC job.
I just look at those franchises, man. And the Saints don't have a quarterback, right? They're still looking, and I don't see
Chicago.
Yeah, if there's any team that I think that would maybe interest him would be Chicago. Working with
Justin Fields, Minnesota still hasn't been. Still hasn't hired a coach. Even there's a lot of open jobs out there.
I know. I'm trying to be confident that he stays. And I say that really truly because I think that this team, although it's going to be young in a lot of different spots next year, the schedule is not as strong next year. And I think that if they get off to a good start, I say if they beat Oregon, they can develop into what they need to develop into. I don't even care if Stetson's – what's that?
They'll beat Oregon. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think when it comes to the running game, and I think, you know, Todd Monken's ability to draw up plays and utilize his tight ends, no matter who the quarterback is, he's going to make those guys feel comfortable. It's just really going to come down to the defensive side of the ball and their ability to gel, mature quickly, because it's not going to be the same type of defense that we saw last year, but it could have flashes of it because there's a lot of talent on that side of the field, a lot of leadership, and all of the Smiths that are coming back, all those three guys are leaders, right?
You got the three Smiths musketeers out there.
Right. And then you got Carter. I don't even know if anybody saw that today. Carter was ranked the number one player in the 2023 class of the NFL.
He deserves it.
Yeah. That's outstanding.
We should have signed that NIL deal with him when we had a chance. Now he's going to be right. Signing $40 million deals here in about 12 months.
He was asking.
Drop the ball.
it hit the budget a little bit, too hard.
As a matter of fact, I'm about to say, I'm going to text like that. Offer still on the table.
Still might. You have no idea. You have no idea.
Y'all laugh. I'm about to send that text right now, actually.
Well, no. I want to go where you went, Trigger, because you said Kirby's playing chess. Why? What did you mean by that?
That just looked at like, okay, last year before, because we all seen it was out there. Out there, Dan Lanning was leaving last year. You see, he brings in Muschamp for a defensive analyst. Mm-hmm. But what happened this year? Dan Lanning left.
Correct.
Brings in Mike Bobo just in case Todd Monken decides to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Bring back I think we talked about last year. Cortez might be his last year at Georgia. Cortez leave. He brings back B-Mac. Kirby's literally out here playing chess. He know – it seems like he know when the time to hire coaches and to promote them.
Yeah. I'm with you.
The best move to me he made this offseason. It wasn't even – to me, it wasn't the B-Mac hire or the bold Mike Bobo hire. It was the hire – he moved Muschamp to cold defensive coordinator and safeties coach.
Yeah. I agree.
That to me was a W because Muschamp is a great DB coach. We all seen it. Even when he was at South Carolina, look what he did with J.C. Horn.
Right. Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, I made mention of that on Twitter. You know, I tweeted that that's what Kirby's doing. He's playing. He's not even playing chess. He's playing masters level chess with everybody else. And I think there's only two guys right now in the nation that are doing that. I think it's Saban who's developed the ability to kind of transition. But I think at the same time, you got Kirby, who's not only has he transitioned, but Kirby has taken the opportunity to take everything he's learned from Saban and then look into the future with it. Even going back to, you know, scheduling tougher teams on the schedule. Now everybody wants to do it, right? But here we are, Georgia. I mean, he 7 years out, 8 years out, he had Oregon on the schedule. He had Clemson on the schedule, where everybody else is going to have to try to catch up to that. And even in terms of NIL, you know, I mean, he knew what was coming. Everybody knew what was coming. But he put them in a position, not where he's paying guys NIL-wise, but he put them in a position to say, you know what, guys, if you win, whatever you can get NIL wise, whatever you can get. We don't have to use NIL to bring you in. I mean, he's been recruiting on steroids before that even happened. So I right. think that he's playing Masters levels chess right now. Everyone else is playing checkers. I agree. And the
first thing about that 2018 class we had, some of them guys have got drafted and are in the league now, and they haven't got drafted before last year. They go into the league this year.
Right. Right. But hey, man, you know what? Before we even go any further, we got a special guest in the building. You know, a lot of stuff is going on with the Auburn Tigers arrival. And we got Jordan Hill, who used to cover Auburn. I say used to because now he is moving on to cover Georgia with 247. And so let's transition. Let's move over there. I think he's in the green room. And let's hit him up and let's find out what's going on. All right, fellas. He's out of the green room. He is here. He is now covering those Georgia Bulldogs with 247. We finally got him out of the enemy line, you know, from behind enemy lines. We got Jordan Hill. Jordan, what is going on, buddy?
Hey, you know, I got to say, I don't know if I didn't time it. You know, this wasn't the plan, but, man, if I was going to pick a time to leave Auburn, it might have been just about the perfect time. But, yeah, excited. Excited to get boots on the ground before too long back in Athens and excited to get right back to it.
Now, Jordan, you got Georgia roots, though, right?
Yeah. So I grew up in North Georgia in a little town called Jasper, Georgia. I went to school at Georgia, graduated 2016, covered the team for a couple of years as a student. So, yeah, so a lot of ties, a lot of family in and around Athens. And so, yeah, it's nice little homecoming and also really – really cool opportunity to join 247 and get a chance to cover the reigning national champs.
That's right. Are you happy to kind of get away from Auburn and get back home to Georgia and actually cover a national champion instead of what's going on back there in Auburn?
Yeah. You trying to get this guy killed?
I know. I'm not out of here yet, Lamar. You got to be careful. I will say, you know, I am very excited to get a chance to cover Georgia. A lot of people, you know, that – you know, when I was still in school or still there. So that's pretty cool. And I'll shout out, you know, I had a really good time in my time in Auburn, a lot of good people, a lot of good riders. I really enjoyed the beat and was really lucky. A lot of people my age, you know, mid 20s, early 30s, we all kind of saw things the same way. And, you know, it is tough. It's tough to leave, but I am really excited to be back, especially going to Georgia, you know, sort of knowing the ins and outs and seeing how much has changed. You know, we came back to Athens just for a little bit, I guess that was last week. And I could tell there's stuff that's changed since I graduated. So it's definitely exciting to go back to something I kind of know, but also kind of get caught up on what's changed.
Well, let's get into it. Let's get into it, man. The elephant in the room. We already know the elephant in the room. I mean, you were there, boots on the ground. What is going on in Auburn right now from your perspective?
For sure. And again, kind of parachuted out of there as the worst of it. Kind of. But really, it's power struggle. It's a situation where you got Brian Harsin, a guy that, you know, won at Boise State, but was not a consensus pick for the Auburn job. You had boosters and you had people behind the scenes that wanted other people, wanted Kevin Steele, who was the defensive coordinator. Ultimately, Alan Green got his way, the athletic director. They hired Brian Harsin, and things just haven't gone well. And really, it's only gotten worse since the season ended. They end the season 6-7. They lost the last five games, had a chance to win the Iron Bowl and couldn't get it done, gave up 40 unanswered against Mississippi State in a game they lost. And then since then, it's just been another domino after another of things just not breaking Harsin's way. With both his coordinators leaving, they fire Mike Bobo. Derek Mason decides to leave to take what at best you could say is a lateral job to go to Oklahoma State. Took like a $400,000 a year pay cut to go to Oklahoma State to leave. They hire Austin Davis, a guy that's still young. I think he's like 32. To be the offensive coordinator, really more be the quarterback's coach, but, you know, be kind of a young and up-and-coming coach on the staff. He leaves after 43 days. I mean, they've never practiced with Austin Davis on the staff. They brought in two quarterbacks in the time that Austin was here and then left. And, you know, when the news was breaking that Austin was leaving, those guys, Robbie Ashford and Zach Calzada, were on social media being like, you know, basically what the heck's going on. It's just been one thing after another since the Iron Bowl. I think the number now is up to 19 or 20 players have entered the portal. It's just a situation where there's been one thing after another, and I think the powers that be are really just kind of fed up with the direction of the program. And there's some people, I think, that are kind of looking at it and saying, oh, you know, it's Auburn being Auburn, you know, just being impatient. And I think there's a little bit more to it than that. And, you know, the university is doing an investigation into Harsin just to see, you know, what's going on. You had guys like defensive tackle Lee Hunter saying, you know, he treated his players like dogs. You had guys like Spoke Monday, a safety that, you know, was really productive last year. I mean, come up, you know, and say that he can't relate to players. He can't relate to people like Smoke was saying. That came from nothing, you know, and I think it's a situation where the university wants to look into the situation. Just make sure that, you know, there's nothing, you know, really that needs to, you know, just make sure they understand everything going on. And that's something that the Auburn University president, Jay Googe, said last week, that they want to separate fact from fiction. Now, would any of this be happening if they didn't go 6-7? Absolutely not. None of, but it's been one thing after another. And it's a situation too, and I've told people, and I definitely say this a little more freely now that I'm not still here. I'm convinced, besides all this, that Brian Harsin was going to get fired this fall, because I think they're going to be really, really bad. I think their offense is just in a very bad way. They have no receivers. There were already rumors, besides the guys that have entered the portal, that a couple more receivers were going to enter the portal. So it's a situation where I get a lot of people looking at it and being like, he's been on the job 14 months and they're trying to run him out. I think, one, they want to make sure they understand, why did all these staff members leave? Why, you know, basically it's been Brian's Boise guys have been really the only ones that have kind of stayed on staff. And then why did all these players leave? Why did – you know, Bo Nix decided that he was going to leave when, I mean, you know, you can say everything you want to about Bo Nix. You can criticize him, and I think fairly so on some fronts. But this guy was Auburn through and through, and he decided, I've had enough of this. I don't want to be back for this. So I'm not sure what's going to happen. I mean, as we record, you know, Brian went to the SEC coaches meeting that, truthfully, a lot of us on the beat sort of thought, you know, there's no way. There is no way he's going to be on and make it to this meeting. He did, you know, kept his mouth shut as he got out and got to his car and left. So I don't know. And I don't know how soon it's gonna, you know, play out. My expectation is it's kind of like an HR situation where they're kind of trying to check all their boxes, you know, and I'm not reporting anything at this point. I'm off the beat, and I think it's just speculation. I'd still be really surprised if he's the head coach. And then what that's gonna lead from there is who they go hire, who would want this job in the situation that they find themselves in. So it's definitely a really messy situation. And I think, just based on what I've heard, what I've seen, it may not have a quick resolution. It may be something that we see kind of goes on through this week, and who knows how long it could wind up playing out.
Yeah, Jordan, I mean, having watched and observed Auburn for a long time and having some family members that are alums there and stuff like that, like, do you feel like it's accurate to say that this has kind of been building for like possibly decades? Like, it feels like there's always been these sort of internal power struggles going on behind the scenes in Auburn, but whenever some of those things have kind of come close to boiling over in the past, they win the Iron Bowl, or, you know, something kind of happens to intervene where the team does just enough to avoid this type of like coup kind of situation, which I know there's a lot of stuff that's been printed and speculated on about Harsin. And it seems like there's good reason why some of the people want him gone. But is it fair to say that some of this also feels like kind of throwing stuff against the wall, trying to see what sticks in terms of firing him or, you know, getting rid of him? Because it feels like there's a certain faction that is just so determined to get rid of him that, you know, they'll float sort of any possible rumor on message boards to see if maybe something shakes loose and internally, or there's some information that comes out of it. Is that fair?
You mean like sliced bread?
not like sliced bread. Sliced bread was on the money.
Yeah, some of it has been kind of ugly. I mean, some of the message board stuff with rumors that, you know, as far as I can tell, haven't been, you know, substantiated. But it is interesting, Graham, because when you were saying that, it made me think about a lot of the Gus Malzahn era, and especially the last 3 or 4 years, because there were so many situations where it was like, he needs this game. Like, they really might fire him, and he tended to win it more often than not. Now,
right.
2020, they played Texas A&M at Auburn, and really, we were all looking at each other like, all right, this is the game. He's going to win this game. Everybody's going to back off. And they were right there. I think the game might have been tied, or they might have been down a point or two in the fourth quarter. Offense couldn't do anything. I think they had two consecutive three and outs in the fourth quarter, and then Texas A&M wins it. And from there, it was kind of, you know, the end of the Gus era. I think the thing that really stands out to me as far as this situation with throwing stuff against the wall, I think it's to the point, not that they've decided that, you know, they're going to fire him, which, again, nothing's happened as far as when we're recording. I still think that ultimately he won't be the coach. But I think they are throwing stuff against the wall to try to figure out if they can get out and fire him for calls. And, you know, I don't know if it's going to devolve into a situation like we saw with Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee, where it kind of seemed like Tennessee was like, here, hey, look at all this stuff. Yeah, we could fire this guy for calls. Hey, look what we found. But, you know, you've just seen some of the stuff the last few days, like with the policy coming out, you know, I guess that was on Wednesday, that said, you know, that you have to comply, you know, with an investigation. And that had pretty much come right off the printer when, you know, it had come out the day before that it had been, the policy had been put into effect. So, you know, I don't know if it's fair to say that, like, just because it's happening this way, that's like, oh, it's just Auburn being Auburn. There is a piece of that. And again, like I said earlier, had they won 9 or 10 games, I think even if they had won 7 games, but one of those games was that Iron Bowl, this probably doesn't happen. But, you know, I've heard other people talk about this, and we've kind of seen it, you know, just from where we got to, you know, follow and watch as things played out, that a lot of the things that Brian Harsin did and some of the reasons people are coming after him, he kind of did to himself. I mean, he didn't really, you know, work with, you know, alums and you know, the money, you know, as much as, you know, you can kind of get on some of the boosters and, you know, it's always, oh, Auburn's boosters are crazy. You do kind of got to play ball with them to a certain extent.
Oh, yeah.
They matter, because when they want to pass the hat around to get you fired, like I was talking to the Auburn Observer's Justin Ferguson. He was like, the buyout's $18 million. They could go to 18 different people and say, give us $1 million and we'll get rid of this guy. So you have to, you know, kind of glad hand. And there's been reports, you know, that like that Brian wouldn't go to Bo Jackson's golf tournament and show up and, right, you know, just glad hand. There's, you just got to do some of that. And that's not even Auburn specific, but I mean, especially with a guy like Bo Jackson. So I think it's a situation where there's plenty of it that can be blamed on all parties. And to say that again, I say that Harsin, you know, was determined that, hey, I'm going to focus on just the football aspect. Well, if you do that, you better win. And they didn't do that last year. And again, the way things are shaping up right now, I'm convinced that they're not making a bowl game. You know, had all this stuff not come out, just a regular offseason, you know, he's the head coach second year, I'm not convinced they win 6 games with the way this roster looks.
You know, the way you talk, it sounds more like, to me, Auburn is just like Texas. Burn orange, the alumni is highly involved. You better play games with the alumni. You better talk the alumni. You better be so involved. And there was only one guy that could do that at Texas, and that was Brown. You know, when he was there at Texas, he had the ability to actually – talk to the alumni, be involved with those guys. And that's why he was successful there. And then all of a sudden you get a Charlie Strong, you get this ring of coaches that just don't do well in Texas. Who could actually survive that environment at Auburn? I mean, like, if Harsin's let go, where do you think they go that can actually survive this turmoil, what's going on there?
It's going to be really interesting, and it's going to be interesting just to see who would even be interested, you know, and who would look at this job, especially after they fire, you know, if they fire Brian, it would be after about 14 months on the job. But to me, just in the modern era in the last 10, 15 years, and it's something Auburn likes to do, and they're doing it right now with their current president, they like getting Auburn men. They like getting guys that have been, yep, in there. And I think really it probably behooves the next coach to be an Auburn man because he knows what he's stepping into. And you know, I think about Gus Malzahn. He was the offensive coordinator here, left and went to Arkansas State. And obviously he saw what happened to Gene Chizik. I mean, he saw that, you know, a couple bad years and you know, really that last year when it was really, really rough. And, you know, the national title didn't matter quite as much by that point. But I think that, you know, to me, if they can go in, again, I think that the amount of people interested in this job is not going to be what you would expect for, you know, one of the best jobs in the conference. I think you can say that. But I think that, you know, it'll be valuable if they can find an Auburn man and, you know, at least someone who has coached here before. And to me, like, a guy that makes a lot of sense is Jeff Grimes at Baylor, the offensive coordinator. He's never been a head coach before, had a lot of success. A lot of people were hoping, at least around the program, that Jeff was going to be a guy that Brian could go hire as his offensive coordinator. I don't know if there were ever any conversations as far as that goes, but ultimately he was not the hire. And, you know, he wasn't a name really as it got down to it that it sounded like Brian was really, you know, zeroing in on. It was Zach Hill that was at Arizona State and was, prior to that, Brian's offensive coordinator at Boise State. And then, obviously, Austin Davis that we talked about earlier. But Jeff Grimes is a guy that I think makes a lot of sense. Other guys, I am really interested if Dale McGee's name comes up, you know, never being a full-time head coach at the collegiate level. But I think if it happened that way, from the Auburn perspective, it would make a ton of sense. And you see right now, as it stands, I just can't help but think, you know, with Dell having coached in Columbus and the amount of success he had at Carver-Columbus, there's a lot of talent in that area going over into Phoenix City. And right now, as it stands, Brian Harsin has not done a good job of really zeroing in on that a couple days ago. To Marion Parker, who I really think was interested in Auburn, named his top five. Auburn wasn't in it. And it's because part of the reason they kind of have ignored and not made Phoenix City and Central and that Columbus area as big a priority as I think they should have. But did they look at a Dale McGee? And would Dale even want that job, especially like we're talking about?
Right now, yeah.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, I think it's fair to say you look at Dale McGee, And you know, we've talked, you know, people talk all the time about how many fewer opportunities that black coaches get to be a head coach, college level, NFL. If you're Dell, do you say, this is the chance, this could be my only chance to be a head coach? Is this the opportunity I want to take? And I could see someone like Dell saying, this isn't worth, you know, if I want to be a head coach, which, you know, just based on what I've seen from Dell and things I've heard, I think, you know, eventually he wants to be a head coach. You know, maybe he says this is just not the time and not the risk I want to take with a job like this.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Lamar, you were kind of making that Texas comparison, but I think it's probably more fair to say that any kind of major SEC job or any college job in a small college town, like you're going to have to deal with some of that kind of glad handing. Like, you've got to suck up to the boosters. Cause I mean, let's be frank here. It's like, they'll pass the hat to get you fired. They also will, you know, be the guys that maybe come through on an NIL deal that helps you land a five-star recruit. Like, there's so much, you know, that they're intertwined with that. I feel like you have to do it. And it seems like Harsin never did it at all. And I mean, you know, it feels like Auburn right now, what they need is like a Matt Luke, the way that he was for Ole Miss when the Hugh Freeze scandal went down. And I think you make a really good point about McGee. It's like, do you want to be that guy that's the bridge, or do you want to be the guy that, you know, someone's bridging over to and kind of smooths over everything so that you walk into a situation to succeed? Because as much as like people gave Matt Luke flack, He recruited Matt Corral. He recruited a lot of those guys that ended up kind of being the core of these last couple of Ole Miss teams. But I am curious, Jordan, if you're willing to share with us or comfortable to share with us. I know there's been some kind of rumors in some circles that like Harsin was somewhat standoffish with local media and just like was never really available to go have that cup of coffee, so to speak, or, you know, create those relationships. And now when this situation came around, it seems like there wasn't too many people in the media to defend him. Does that kind of line up with what you've heard or any of your own personal experience on the beat?
Yeah. I mean, if you look, and I won't point fingers at specific people, but people that really are, you know, Auburn focused and want to, you know, harp on the good things about Auburn, those were some of the people that when this stuff started coming out were the first to sort of report what was happening. So, no, I think that what people have talked about is spot on. We talked to Brian in person. I have talked to Brian Harsin maybe twice. Wow. A lot of the stuff was done on Zoom, and some of it totally fair because of COVID and trying to keep people safe. But very, very limited interactions, you know, never really had a chance to talk to him and even just talk off the record. I mean, just kind of get to know him as a person. And again, it's sort of what I talked about earlier, where Brian didn't do himself any favors really in any sense of the situation with that. I mean, because you have to think too, as many media members as there are, that you would have seen kind of the like, well, hey, here's Brian. Hey, Brian's, here's Brian's perspective. You know, well, let's, you know, there's been plenty done on both sides. There was never really any of that other than the national media, the story with Pete Thamel and ESPN.
Chris Lowe, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, brother, that doesn't mean a whole lot out here. I mean, there's there's plenty of people out here whose names, I really think carry weight around the Auburn community. And there was none of that sort of situation where they're like, all right, look, this is what you're hearing on this side. Well, let's, you know, be really clear about what Brian's been dealing with. There was none of that. And again, nobody has, you know, no one has anyone to blame. Brian Harsin has nobody to blame but himself for, you know, not playing ball. I mean, it's the same thing talking about with the boosters. There's got to be that kind of understanding. And, you know, I don't think he was ever interested in that. Now, had he realized, hey, after a little bit over a year on the job, my job might be in jeopardy, maybe he would have done things different. But again, it's a situation where his decisions and some of the things that have broke, again, some stuff out of his control and others very much in his control. It's why we're talking about that he might be out of a job before he even gets to his second season.
I'll tell you what, come hell or high water, I mean, Georgia just came off of a natty. You got Alabama that's dominating the West. You got Texas A&M that's buying everybody they can possibly buy. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Does Auburn find themselves in a situation where they say, you know what, we got to get a coach that we want right now, and we got to strike when the iron's hot, because otherwise, by the time we look up, we could be one of the worst teams in the SEC with everyone getting better. I mean, you got the changes over at Tennessee. They're going to obviously get a little bit better. Florida's trying to reload and try to get better. I mean, things are going to happen. Auburn could really find themselves in a compromising situation. Is that really one of the other reasons why they try to make this move now?
Well, I think it definitely has to play a part in it. And I always go back when you think about the athletic director or whoever winds up really making the decision, if it's the university president, wherever the decision is made. But Jeremy Foley, who was athletic director at Florida, it might have been after Muschamp was fired. I don't remember which move was made, but essentially, he said, when you know that a move is inevitable, you just go ahead and make it. And I think that's the situation. And I think that, again, you know, we'll see if they wind up paying him $18 million to go away or if they're able to fire him for cause. But I have seen enough as a media member with how they're trying to build this program to tell you guys they are not in a position to keep up whether Brian Harsin is the head coach or not. I mean, whether all this stuff.
Interesting. What do you mean by that?
The offensive talent is just not there. I think the defense is all right, but then you look at the way this offense is built, I don't think they have the quarterback to compete with. You know, I mean, the way that the West is built right now, you know, I think they're clearly behind Alabama. They're clearly behind Texas A&M. I think they're clearly behind LSU. And you know, I think Ole Miss is in good shape, especially compared to Auburn. You just look at the roster attrition over the last, you know, couple weeks, couple months, and the inability to bring in guys to replace those guys. I mean, I'll be quite, you know, frank with the quarterback position. I'd rather have Bo Nix than Zach Calzada. And I think it's a situation where it could be Zach Calzada or TJ Finley, who, you know, no offense to TJ Finley, and he, you know, he played through injury in that Iron Bowl, but I saw nothing that makes you say, okay, with TJ Finley, if TJ Finley beats, you know, Zach Calzada and these other guys for the job, we're feeling good. We can build off a 6-win debut and get to 7 or 8 wins. I'm not convinced. I look at the entire SEC West and find it really hard to see more than maybe 1 win in the division. And then I think you got to play Missouri as the other East team in 2022. And you know, I don't know really what to make of that game. But, yeah, I mean, I just think the way they've been trying to build this thing, and then, you know, a couple weekends ago they had their junior day and there was like 15 kids there and like 2 from the state of Alabama. Like, wow. What are we doing? Like it's just – you know, aside from all the controversy and what's being investigated, I don't think, you know, they hired an outside guy. He had some SEC staff members. He had a receivers coach who had coached at practically every program in the state of Alabama. Well, he fired him after 4 games. And now he doesn't have Derek Mason. He doesn't have Mike Bobo. I just think, aside from the scandal, aside from, you know, how he comes up, if he's the coach – in 6 months, if he's not the coach 6 hours from now, I just don't think what they're trying to build here is going to amount to much as long as Brian Harsin is the head coach.
So, okay, you say as long as Brian Harsin is the head coach. Like, you do still feel like Auburn, the program, the administration, financially, is like the commitment is there if the right guy is in the head coaching spot, right?
Yeah. I think Auburn is very much in a position where they can contend. They can, you could count on 8-9 wins, you know, a dip here and there, but looking at that, but I just think that they hired an outside guy and really were like, all right, he's an X's and O's guys. We're really going to try to pluck someone from the Mountain West and maybe he can be our Urban Meyer. You know, I don't think they necessarily thought, okay, he'll come in here in 2 years and win a national title. But I thought, you know, that looking at that hire that they hoped, you know, they can have more consistency than the end of the Gus Malzahn era. Because, you know, and I think that there's going to be people who kind of look at it and say revisionist history and say, oh, well, they should have never fired Gus. No, I don't. You know, as someone who watched the program, I don't think that's accurate. I think they just shouldn't have hired who they hired. The offense had gotten stale with Gus. Yeah. He couldn't recruit offensive linemen. I mean, it's just a situation where they just made the wrong hire in replacing Malzahn.
When we talk about that Harsin hire, is it fair or unfair to say that part of the reason that Auburn ended up with Brian Harsin is because of kind of the power vacuum that exists and a head coach with better options not wanting to walk into that? Because it felt like that could have maybe been Napier's job or, you know, somebody. There were some guys that didn't pull the trigger last coaching cycle who have ended up in some pretty high-level P5 jobs this time around that I would think Auburn probably had interest in, and maybe that interest wasn't reciprocated. Is that accurate or?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, just, you know, and there's been people on the beat. I'll shout out Rivals, Brian Matthews. He wrote a column earlier this week just talking about how there's no leadership, you know, he felt like. And I think it's a very fair look at the administration that there's not leadership in the athletic department. And I think that's why they struck out on some of the coaches they wanted. You know, I've heard from people who I really trust who say, you know, that they wanted to go get Mario Cristobal. And you know, I think that the fact that people – in the coaching profession knew that there were still people rallying around Kevin Still, you know, people that there wasn't a unified force at Auburn that said, you know, the money and, you know, athletic director Alan Green, president Jay Gooch, we're all in and we're going to hire Coach X. I think that there were people kind of playing all sides trying to make a hire. And you know, I thought that it was really a situation where you look at a guy like Brian Harsin, who had been rumored for jobs in the past. I know that his name came up with Arkansas. I think there was a couple Pac-12 jobs over the last few years that his name came up. I don't know if he was ever considered really a finalist. So you could kind of see the situation with him where he was like, hey, man, I've been at Boise. I want Boise out of the Mountain West. This is not working. This is a situation where I understand you know, I don't think he fully understood, but I think he did understand the situation and some of the powers that be at Auburn. He said, all right, let's take a chance and take this job. And you had coaches with other options like a Billy Napier who was like, I'll stay at Louisiana another year. We'll, you know, win 9-10 games and I'll try to get another job. And I think that he did, he played it smart. And I think he played it to his advantage in getting the Florida job. And yeah, I mean, I think it was a situation where there weren't really unified forces to go in and say, we want to get this up and coming coach, a guy that's got ties to this area, a guy who, you know, say has been an SEC assistant before. And it cost him. And that's why it seemed like that search 2 Decembers ago, at least from my perspective following it, it seemed like there was a twist and turn every single day. And hey, look at where we are now. There's twists and turns every single day with whether or not this coach is even going to make it to the second fall with the program.
Well, Jordan, I mean, you're going from the outhouse to the penthouse. So what are you looking forward to covering with Georgia? I mean, obviously, it's the Natty, right? But there's still some little minor hiccups going on right now in Athens. We got a DB search going on. We got some guys that have hit the portal, you know. Dog Nation is a little bit nervous about it. I have no idea why, because Kirby is who Kirby is. He's taking care of business. What are you looking forward to covering?
Yeah, I'm really just on the whole just interested in how you follow up that national championship. I mean, like I told you guys at the jump, you know, I grew up in Georgia. Pretty much all of my family are Georgia fans. You know, I know as well as anyone that's been around the program just how much fans really, really wanted that national title. Now you got it, and if you look at, like, Kirby Smart and the players, you've reached the top of that mountain. What comes next? And you know, we can talk about all the production they've lost, which, you know, we see with teams like Alabama every single year. How do they follow it up? You know, and specifically with the defense, I think that's the thing I'm interested in is just who steps up. I think we've seen plenty of guys that are very much capable of stepping up. But how does that look? Are there growing pains? You know, what does the start of the year look like? Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is just seeing how they follow that national championship. Are there any hiccups? And I got to throw out, hey, the quarterback situation. You know, I'm sure you guys might have talked about that a time or two. but just what happens with Stetson Bennett, you know, how he comes through the spring. And if there is, you know, a legitimate quarterback competition and what that kind of looks like. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Again, it's going to be fun kind of getting caught up to speed. I feel like the last few days since I got done in Opelika, I've just been taking notes and trying to start watching at least a little bit of last year and trying to catch up on everybody that they've signed and get a feel for what this roster is going to look like going into spring practice.
So before we let you go, you've told us what you're excited to cover about the team, but going back to Athens, having been, you know, a UGA alum, like, you got any favorite restaurants or, you know, establishments that you're excited to get back to visiting on a frequent basis?
Oh yeah. Mama's Boy's got to be at the top. Like, I can't wait to get back to that. It's been hard not living in a town with a Raising Cane's. That's usually been my
man. I live 2 doors down from that Raising Cane's my junior year of college, and I'm pretty sure I paid like at least one or two employees yearly salaries over that time.
I worked at the Red and Black, the student paper, and it's right down the street from the Raising Cane's. So it's just like, hey, let's go hop over there and get some food. And those are probably the two big ones, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some other ones, but it's just going to be nice. And again, I will say I'm real upset that the taco stand downtown, when that one went out, that one hurt.
Dude, yeah, one. For sure. Yeah. But Galliantino's, yeah. Though, you know, if you're covering baseball games, it's a nice little easy hop over there between innings to pick up an order.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm looking forward to getting back and trying to explore. I know there's been some new restaurants come in, and really excited just to kind of get back in the flow of living in Athens.
Well, Jordan, before you go, let the people know exactly where they can find your material, find your stuff. I mean, obviously it's 247, but, you know, let it rip.
Yeah, Dogs 247. My Twitter's at Jordan Davis Hill. Going to be starting on Monday, Valentine's Day. So going to be ripping off, hopefully going to have a few stories right off the top. And And yeah, just going to be all over it with the Dogs 247 and excited to, I think it's March 15th is when spring practice is going to open. And I know it's going to be full throttle leading up to G-Day, and it's going to be really exciting. Excited to get on the, get back into town and get back to work.
Well, speaking of G-Day, I hope to see you there. I know I'm going, I'm taking the kids, if my wife lets me get them out of Virginia with all this COVID stuff. But I'm going to be there. I don't know if Graham and Trey are going to be there, but I'm going to be there. So hopefully get a chance to meet you, shake your hand, and maybe we'll hit up some Raising Cane's when we're there.
That sounds like a plan.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for joining us, Jordan.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Trick or Trey. What are your thoughts on what Jordan Hill had to say? Graham had to dip out. You know, he's got some things he's had to take care of. But what are your thoughts on what Jordan had to bring with, you know, with Auburn and all of his intel and all of his information on that?
Everything he said was on point to me, because it's going to be hard for them to find a guy that wants to take the Auburn job. Because remember, Brian has – we in year one with him, and he's about to be already gone less than 20 months in.
Right.
Before the second season. I don't know, man. That, and then you got to look at you in the SEC West. You got to play Georgia every year, Bama every year. I think LSU and Florida sometime every year. Texas A&M, Arkansas, Ole Miss, like even Kentucky.
Yeah.
But don't have to look every year. Bama, Georgia, LSU, and Texas A&M. I don't know, man. That's tough right there. That's tough.
Yeah, I agree, man. You know, and even when I brought up the analogy, the reason I brought up the analogy of, like, Texas is because that's a tough place to play. I mean, a tough place to coach. And if you don't really, you know, massage the boosters, you don't do what they, you know, play their game, it's a type of school that'll get you up out of there quick. And I think Auburn – saw Harsin. I think they saw that he was not really truly an SEC type guy. And the SEC, I don't, like Graham said, I don't care where you're at, what school in the SEC, they have a way of doing things where if you're not part of our family, I don't care where you come from and you can't really, I guess, connect with the community, they're going to get you up out. And a guy like Harsin, who comes off a little rough, obviously Jordan was saying that he presented himself a little rough media-wise. He found himself in a situation now with speculation. I'm not going to get into the speculation because I'm not going to throw anybody's name out there. But a lot of things out there where they can get rid of you. And then we find ourselves right now, I guess, on a when this comes out on a Friday, will he have a job? And according to Jordan, he thinks he's probably going to be let go. I mean, I've been saying that for a while. I don't think you can go through all this in the offseason. You know, a lot of guys hitting the portal, all the media attention for them to actually stick with Harsin. I don't even care if it's money involved. There's no possible way this is going to end well
for either side. I don't think he, when the season starts, I don't think he's going to be the head coach.
Yeah.
For all of them, I don't think he's going to be the head coach for all of them.
What are your thoughts on Dale? You think, I know what Jordan said, but do you think Dale would take something like this, an opportunity?
How Auburn is right now, I don't even think I'd be wanting to be putting that fire like that.
Yeah. And I'll agree, man. I mean, just what like Jordan said, I know we got what's going on in the NFL right now with the lack of opportunities for African Americans. Heck, it's Black History Month. And you know, you want to be excited for Black men to actually get an opportunity, but sometimes you have to decline a job for the preservation of your job. And Dale's so good. Don't get me wrong. Dale's so good as a recruiter, as a coach, and as a man that even if he went to an Auburn and it didn't go so well, he'd have a job tomorrow. You know what I mean? He'd have a job the next day because of his integrity. But do you take that job? Do you put that blemish on your resume just for the sake of wanting to be a head coach? I think a guy like Dale, maybe he puts himself in a Kirby Smart situation where Mark Richt comes before Kirby Smart, and then all of a sudden Kirby comes in. Some of the foundation is laid. The university is actually starting to, you know, move into a transition of rebuilding itself in terms of its facilities. maybe he does the same thing. Maybe he lets the next guy go to Auburn and then eventually wants to go back to Auburn and take that job. But, I mean, heck, I'm selfish. I want the guy here forever. But we always know, man, it's not going to last forever. Eventually he's going to move on at some point. But I would hate that he would see this as an opportunity because I would never want him to fail at that magnitude. I think
how it is right now, man, I wouldn't want to put him in that fire because you don't got – you barely – you lost wide receiver one, receiver two gone, and you basically – you don't know who quarterback one going to be. The old line for Auburn is still need to be worked on.
Right.
I don't know, man. That's tough right there. And then you playing the SEC, that team has a lot of work to be done.
Yeah,
the defense is good, but the offense, ooh,
yeah. I mean, yeah, they just got too many holes, and especially now that you put yourself in the eight ball, behind the eight ball, because even regardless of the recruiting, now you put yourself in a position where even if there's portal guys,
play wasn't good.
Yeah, it wasn't good, and even portal guys are going to look at it and say, "Man, you had too much media attention. Like, is things cool? Am I going to go there? Am I going to be playing for you for the next year or two? Or is it going to be somebody else if you get fired?" So, right. I mean, it's hurt them tremendously. They're a year and a half behind. So, yeah, it's going to be tough.
Tank. You got Tank there, but he's not going to fix everything.
No way. No possible way. Not at all. But you got anything else, man, before we head up out of here? I know we had a pretty good show talking about portal talk and Graham was on the building. It was in the building. You were in the building, and also Jordan Hill. You got anything else?
Championship trade, man. Go Dogs.
All right, folks. We're going to get up out of here. But remember to go to the website, you know, the 100 Sanford Podcast website. You can still click on the link, get that new Natty merch from Fanatics. Heck, I got a whole bunch of stuff that just came in. Again, I got to put it up in my new office. But that's it for the night. We'll see you. When we see you, go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dogs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.